A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is Internet Marketing. Hello there, and welcome to episode 172 of Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. And in today's show, Kelvin talks to Stephen Waddington about his new book, Brand Anarchy: Managing Corporate Reputation. All coming up in Internet Marketing.
So, Stephen, you've recently released a book called Brand Anarchy with the subtitle Managing Corporate Reputation. Can you talk us a bit about kind of how the book came about and kind of the, I suppose, the overreaching idea for the book that you had when you were putting it together?
Yeah, so there was there's a couple of motivations. The main one was came out of a conference I spoke at the London Stock Exchange about 2 years ago. It was a room full of CEOs, CIOs, and CMOs, you know, the most senior people from large enterprise organizations. And I was talking about risk, and risk in terms of all the different forms of media. Predominantly social media. And my message was, you have no control over this. What are you doing about it? The response was utter panic. Given this was the 2010, I then set about with a guy I've worked with for a long time, Steve Earle, exploring this further from a senior management point of view and putting together what became Brand Anarchy. So Brand Anarchy was exploring this issue of predominantly reputation and the issue of reputation in a world where the media is completely fragmented and anyone can become a publisher, and how, from a corporate communication point of view, you deal with that. That was essentially the pitch, which we took to a couple of publishers, and Bloomsbury snapped it up, and you know, the result is the book that you've seen published.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of kind of to sum up the sort of biggest challenge that these kind of most senior marketers face, you know, so it's kind of, there's this, you talked about the kind of anyone's a publisher, and do you think that's what's really made it most difficult for people who perhaps were very confident in their communication strategy previously to adapt to that?
So there's been a misperception for an awful long time since the 1950s when corporate communication took a wrong turn, in my view. We became, as communicators, obsessed with the media as the medium to which we reach our audiences. So corporate communication became about issuing press releases to get stuff in broadcast channels and traditional media, print and radio as we know it, and that worked to an extent, and it was a very efficient way of working, because you know, you send a press release to a number of journalists, and they write your story, and you know, that story reaches the audience that you're trying to hit. It's not a very efficient model, because you know, you're relying on being able to influence the journalist appropriately to write your story, and then for them to convey the messages that you want. But essentially, that, you know, that's how corporate communication has worked up until around the turn of the 1998, 99, when the internet, consumer internet, went mainstream. And we started to see the media completely fragmenting. So traditional media outlets went on to online and tried to publish their content out directly in front of the audience to reach a broader audience. And, you know, individuals became publishers. So you saw the rise of new influencers, you know, and everything, you know, there's a book, I'm just trying to remember the name of the book that's hugely influential that was written by Dr. Searles.
Clue Train, is that
Clue Train, yeah, okay. So, turn of the century, you saw Clue Train and everything that happened that Clue Train talked about, you know, markets becoming completely open and transparent on the internet, you know, applies as much to corporate communications and the media as it does to any other business that the internet has destroyed and forced to be rebuilt.
And so to that extent then, is that, because, you know, I suppose what you're kind of making the distinction there is between kind of communications and, you know, public relations, where it kind of means press rather than public relations, as it were. So kind of, do you think that like as an industry, PR is moving towards describing itself more as communications? Is that kind of coming back in vogue, or is it still always the same, you know?
So it's got to be. So we've got to get the industry has been obsessed since the 1950s, when we saw the rise of broadcast media and telly and radio, and that's really where we became obsessed. The public relations industry became obsessed with media relations and really did itself an injustice. Before then, you know, the industry is only 100 or so years old. Before then, you know, the way that you work was directly with an audience through engagement, through events, and, you know, actual communication, two-way communication with your audience, and that, you know, that something went wrong in the 50s because we became obsessed. We saw the rise of broadcast media and we saw you know, we saw that as an opportunity to make our jobs a lot easier, when in fact, you know, it was in my view, it's a completely wrong turn. So in the book you get, you know, there's some wonderful stories, and the great thing about doing this is writing a book is, you know, it's a bit like blogging, but with a higher degree of influence, because you can get access to incredible people. And one of the people we talked about and is headlined in the book is Alistair Campbell, the former director of communication for Tony Blair in Downing Street. And he tells the story through the book of how if he'd wanted to dominate a media agenda for 24 or 48 hours, he'd get a story, pitch a story into a national tabloid, pitch it into a broadsheet paper, and, you know, pitch it to the BBC in the UK. And he would guarantee then that, you know, for the next 48 hours, you know, this is the back end of the 90s, that story would dominate. You can't do that anymore, because, you know, the world just doesn't work like that. There's so many more outlets where you have to, you know, people are getting their news from, the news, or, you know, the media isn't divided into nice 24-hour news segments anymore. It's constant, absolutely constant. So that's the, you know, that's the story. And then we look at, through the book, we look at how, you know, corporate communicators PR are dealing with this, you know, and our lesson, if you like, the thing that became obvious is, you know, communicators have tried to control, corporate communicators have tried to control messages from an organization forever. Actually, it's never really worked properly, because of because we've used the media as an intermediary. And what's happening now with the internet, exactly as Clue Train predicted, is that, you know, we are able to have transparent conversations with audiences back and forth, and, you know, therein is the story of social media. But it means, you know, there's some lessons that PRs and corporate communicators have to learn to operate in this new world. Mm. And they're learning them, and, you know.
Mm. And do you think the skills that are required to make that pitch, you know, because potentially it's working in quite a different way now, rather than kind of you talked about the Alistair Campbell, you know, it's free phone calls he needs to make there, free relationships he needs to build up, or, you know, I know there's more than that, but, you know, kind of there, you know, if he wants to tap into it, there's kind of a smaller number of people there. How do you feel that kind of, you know, has the art of the pitch changed, and in what ways, and kind of what can people do to kind of pitch when they're kind of, it's in a more of a abstract way to a larger audience potentially than they would have done previously?
So the first thing you've got to do is listen to what your audience is saying. If you want to be part of a market that exists anywhere, you've got to, you know, tune in to the motivations of that market, and that starts with listening. And you know, before you do anything, you know, explore what it is, you know, what are the issues within the market that you're talking about, and then align yourself with those. You know, we hear very, you know, there's lots of hackneyed metaphors for this. You know, the bloke in the pub that just starts talking nonsense no one will listen to, but, you know, the bloke who goes in and into a group and listens to what they're talking about and then engages in a contextual way with relevant, you know, and is relevant and interesting, you know, becomes part of the discussion. And you know, that's an overused metaphor, but it's entirely accurate. So listening is the first thing, and then the creation of content around, you know, that's interesting and inspiring to the market you're trying to work with.
And have you got any practical advice on how to produce that? Because I think that's, you know, and it's traps maybe not the right word, but it's kind of, it's difficult. You hear a lot, particularly in the search community, particularly in the social media community, about producing great content. But very rarely do people kind of go into too much more detail about the process of how you do that than, you know, it kind of is almost, it feels like people are paying lip service to it, if you see what I mean. That you very rarely hear about kind of how do you put together these great stories? How do you carry out these great surveys? You know, those types of challenges. Is there any advice you've got to people on if they want, they've listened, they've heard what the conversations are happening, they know they need to produce something compelling to kind of get a conversation started? Any kind of practical advice on how to come up with those ideas or how to put them together and turn them into something that people are going to talk about?
So it's back to the age old, skill of storytelling, and, you know, ultimately that's a creative process. And, you know, you've got to start, you know, it's the basics that you're taught at primary school as a kid. You've got to start with a beginning and have a middle and an end. And, you know, you've got to involve your audience in that conversation in somehow. I think, you know, so often where you're right, so often where we go wrong is we pay lip service to creating content that is going to inspire conversations with an audience. And, you know, so often we reverse.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
to the basics of a blog post, a piece of text. You know, where actually we don't really think beyond that about how we're going to create something that is shareable, that is going to motivate people to engage and respond and become part of the conversation. Mm. And then he's going to take that, whatever that content is, and rework it, remash it, and, you know, really contribute to the development of it. I know you guys are very focused on, you know, the future of search and where search is going. Well, you know, it seems to me that social signals are becoming more and more important as part of that. And, you know, it's critical for us to up our game creatively, to create content that, you know, is inspirational to our audience and isn't just so what. Mm. You know, the good news for the PR guys is that, you know, I see that as an editorial process, and that is the one thing that the PR guys have always understood really, really well, how to frame a story, how to contextualize it, and how to engage. Mm. The real challenge that corporate communications face, tying it back into brand anarchy, is this loss of control. Mm. You know, the idea that you create a piece of content, you put it out into the market, circulate it via Twitter, via blogs, and then, you know, it's utterly out of your control. And that's one of the big lessons of brand anarchy. You know, actually, you've never had control, really. Conversations have always gone on about your organization without you necessarily knowing about it. The beautiful thing about the internet is it's utterly transparent now, and you can see and listen to those conversations if you so want to, and respond and engage with them.
And have you got any advice for people where kind of either it develops into a crisis, or they kind of had a vision of how something, you know, because there is, whenever you're kind of producing these assets, producing these, you know, social objects, there's, you know, an interpretation of how you think the market and your audiences might react to that. But often that won't be what you expected, and it might be a negative thing. And I think that, you know, there's all kinds of examples you can see where someone's created something for a social audience and the social audience hasn't responded to it in the way that they'd hoped. Have you got any kind of advice on how you kind of deal with those crises? Have you kind of worked with projects where someone perhaps has put something out there and it's just not been the response that you had anticipated?
Yeah, so you have to be utterly transparent, and if you screw up, you know, as inevitably will, you know, there's no hard and fast rules yet. Yeah. We're all learning as we go. If you do screw up, admit it quickly and take steps to redress it quickly, and you'll find you're forgiven for that, because it's human nature. No one's perfect. The organizations and companies that come out of crisis situations really quickly are the ones that recognize their mistake and address it very, very quickly. And, you know, don't try and cover it up. Don't try and delete blog posts, Facebook posts, Twitter comments. Don't ignore the conversation, you know, full and frank. Transparency, you know, is the best way. You know, you've got to remember that we're dealing here with at the social level, it's all about human relationships. And this is the big challenge that corporate organizations face in altering the style of their language and their communication for the social world. And it's something we're going to see played out over the next decade or so, that they're having to change the way they speak and their tone of voice. And not a lot of organizations are getting it right, and mistakes are being made along the way.
Do you think there's also kind of a reticence to make mistakes and learn from them? Because you hear about this a lot kind of in the world of startups and the kind of the minimum viable products and pivots and all that type of language that's used, whereby there's kind of, at least in America in the startup culture, there's an expectation that you probably won't get it right first time, and that things will fail and you will learn from them, you will progress, and there's no kind of downside necessarily, or at least as I get the perception that there's less of a downside to having tried something and it failed, which of course, potentially where you're looking at this kind of disruptive marketplace with, you know, you're never quite sure what's going to go viral, what's going to take off, what's going to make a connection with your audience. Do you think that, particularly in the UK, marketing and PR and communications, a reticence to get something wrong, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was going to say, you said critical. Your critical piece of insight in that question is the UK market. I think this is unusual to the UK and possibly Western Europe, where there's and maybe parts of Asia as well, where failure carries you know, an embarrassment, and you know, people are very, very concerned about their personal perception, where actually, you know, there's great case studies of organizations that have built their reputation, and the greatest example of that is undoubtedly Dell, by, you know, recognizing a mistake, learning from it, and then building upon it. I think it is a uniquely, particularly in the UK, it's an issue, because you know, the personal reputation is kind of ingrained within our culture, you know, and failure is deemed unacceptable and always has been. Very, very different, as you say, if you go to the West Coast of the state, well, anywhere in America, where you know, it's generally accepted, you know, that you will screw up and you learn from it and you move on from it.
And one final question, Wads, as well. You kind of, inevitably, when you're kind of you know, starting to talk about the kind of perception of influencers and that kind of thing, tools like Clout and Peer Index start to come into the equation. And I know it's kind of, it's been probably a topic that you've probably inevitably discussed a bit in the past in terms of these tools that assess influence and influence in inverted commas. How do you feel about them? Is there a place for them? Is there a use for them? How do you use them? How should you, do you think people should use them in their process of trying to put together a communication strategy?
Okay. So I there's a wonderful book published by a man of mine that you might not read, called The Business of Influence by Philip Sheldrake.
Yeah.
And we cite him, Brand Anarchy, because one of the things he's done is very neatly map the flows of influence around an organization and, you know, taking clue train on and applying it to the media. I argue constantly with Philip about peer analytics. The issue with peer analytics is it gives an absolute number to an individual's reputation within a network. And when you give someone an absolute number, they then take that as a badge of honor and use it for self-promotion. What the peer analytics guys are trying to do is help brands make sense of the huge numbers that you have to deal with within a social network. So if you're a brand trying to have conversations with your marketplace, and your marketplace may be thousands of consumers, you have to have some way of creating order and organization with that, within that community, just because otherwise there's no way of managing it, and you need ways of understanding the demographics within that marketplace, and you know, the peer analytics guys are trying to make sense of all that and help brands do that. You know, it's not as a means of understanding a market. You know, yes, we use those tools. As an absolute measure of influence or authority around an individual topic, no, that doesn't make sense. And that, you know, that's what some elements of the social industry got onto. They've started to say, you know, well, I've got a peer index of 43. That means I'm a god within, you know, a particular industry. Well, no, it doesn't. You know, you might have an influence around a topic, but, you know, on another topic, you just, you're nowhere, you know. Peer Index says I'm influential about social media and PR. Yeah, that makes sense. But then it says I'm also influential about graffiti. I have no idea why. You know, I am no Banksy. But, you know, you've just got to view them through a very skeptical lens.
I suppose it's not a perfect tool, but it's some way to potentially bring some sense of order to what potentially is a very disruptive, you know, it's kind of, it's not perfect. And if you understand the flaws in the system, it can help you and potentially give you a sense of...
Certainly. And, you know, therein lies an important lesson for the digital industry. You know, people are, you know, it's a very, very young industry. Really, it's only grown up in the last... It's only started to develop in the last 10 years. And, you know, we're in a situation where it's becoming mainstream as a means of marketing. And as it becomes mainstream, you know, people are taking stronger and stronger marketing positions around their own tools and solutions in terms of, you know, how they're positioning themselves within the market. We seem to have lost that recognition that actually we're a very young market and we're still learning. It is all right to screw up. It is all right, you know, to not get it right every time, as long as you learn from it and, you know, you make the appropriate lessons. And, you know, you recognize, as you just said, no one has absolute answers to anything.
Cool. Yeah, no, I think it's a good way to sum up there, that there are, you know, lessons to be learned. There are mistakes to be made. There are opportunities to be taken advantage of, but equally accept that you're not going to know everything. And I think that's a one thing that I do think is a little bit of a shame about the digital industry as a whole, is that sometimes there's certainly a reticence to kind of, everyone wants to think that they know everything, and sometimes it's a little bit slow to admit, okay, well, this is an area I'm not too knowledgeable in, I need to learn about that. And I think that message is certainly something that I've taken from the book, and I think that it would be really useful for everybody.
Great.
Cool. Well, really appreciate that, Wads. It's a really interesting read, and I certainly recommend it to all our listeners.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you again.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150, and you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.